Okay, good evening, thank you. Tonight we are starting a new series. It's a series that will take us, I assume, 4 weeks of class time, perhaps five. And the question will be whether we'll take a brief break for Chanukah in the middle or not. We'll have to figure that out. But the topic is conversion to Judaism. Now, conversion to Judaism ordinarily is not something I would discuss in these Wednesday nights here. I may try to talk about topics that are more practically relevant, topics that we deal with on a more day-to-day basis. Conversion to Judaism is not one of those. However, there has been a lot of talk about conversion in large part, or almost exclusively, because of the terrible episode with Rabbi Barry Ferrandello down in D.C. And that opened up a lot of conversation, and the conversation is ongoing, and it's halachic conversation, it's theoretical conversation, it's important, and honestly, my feeling is that if everyone is talking about something, we may as well learn Torah about it, because ultimately, that's what we should be doing. Now, tonight we're going to be discussing conversion in a less practical, more theoretical sort of way. But just by way of introduction, how much is there in Shulchan Aruch about the topic of conversion? Topics, for example, like Hilchos Pesach, you have some, 70 chapters in Shulchan Aruch, 80 chapters in Shulchan Aruch. Hilchos Shabbos, you have 102 chapters in Shulchan Aruch, not counting Erevin. How many chapters are there in Shulchan Aruch about Geirus? Conversion to Judaism. How much space does it occupy? This much, this much, this much.
Okay. Probably no anything. It was
what?
It dispersed all over the place.
There's actually two chapters in Shulchan Aruch about halachos of Geirus. Two. That's not too much. Two chapters in Shulchan Aruch is teeny. Right? It's Yoredeus Men, Reis Samaches, and Reis Samaches. Reis Samaches tells me how to do a conversion, right? There are three aspects of conversion. There is, for a male at least, Mila and Tevila and Kabbalah's own mitzvos, that you circumcise, you immerse in the mikvah, and you accept on yourself the burden of mitzvos. For a woman, there is only Tevila and Kabbalah's own mitzvos, right? There's no circumcision. Got that. There used to be another aspect of Geirus called bringing a carbon. At the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you'd have to bring a carbon if you converted. This, of course, raised the question, the Gemara in Krisos on Daf Tes asks, well, hold it, dude. I don't think I use the word dude, that's what I speak. But hold it, 1 second. You have to bring a carbon. Today I don't have a carbon, so maybe there is no conversion that is possible today. Because absent of a carbon, maybe we can't accept you into the Jewish people. Zuck the Gemara. The Gemara says no. The Gemara says we still accept converts today because there's a pasuk. The Torah says, Ki yagor itchem ger l'doro seichem, when you have converts for your generations forever and ever and ever. That means gerus is possible even when there is no conversion. Even when there's no carbon. That's point one. Point two. Geirus presents a philosophical problem for large streams of Jews. You see, if you're a believer in the Kabbalistic differences between Jews and non-Jews, if you assume that Bechiras Am Yisrael means that the Jewish people are completely different than non-Jews, no? Shelo asan kegoyei haaretzos, shelo samanu kemishpachos haadama, that our bodies are different, that's reflected in the mitzvah of Mila, certainly, right? Our laws are different, our neshamas are different, there are whole schools. Chabad is based on a book called Tanya, no? Tanya stresses the fact that non-Jews possess a soul called a Nefesh HaBahamas. Right? Jews possess a soul called a Nefesh HaLokamima, in addition to the Nefesh Bahamas. Jews are fundamentally different than non-Jews. Maharal of Prague assumes that Bechiras Am Yisrael means that Jewish people are really, really, really different. This leads to a big problem. How can you have a convert? Because if our difference is ontological, we are made to be different, so then how on earth can Geirus, how can conversion exist? Yeah?
Maybe I'm anticipating the answer here, but I don't really understand I don't understand why the question is bothersome, because, I mean, it's not like there are readily perceptible differences between Jews and non-Jews, not least to me. So for all we know, when the non-Jew converts to become a Jew, he or she gets all of the extra stuff that the Jews have.
So that could be. And we could say it a tad different. If what made Jews different, let's say, was standing at Har Sinai, right? So we could argue that, you know what? There were lots of people who stood at Har Sinai and subsequently left the fold. And all Geirus is it's bringing you back into where you were beforehand. Right? Many Mefarshim comment that Avram Megayeres Ha'anoshim, Sarai Megayeres Es Ha'anoshim. Right? What happened to all those people that Avram and Sarah brought in? What happened to all of them? So the answer is they were brought under Kanfei Hashchina. They brought under God's wings, and then at some point, right, they fell off. They left. Something happened, right? Something happened that they left. And maybe what Geirus is it's bringing them back. But whatever the fundamental ontological difference that exists between Jews and non-Jews, right, that does not apply to anyone who becomes a ger. Because anyone who becomes a ger has, so to speak, a Jewish, like there's a pintel of yid. There's a Jewish aspect within them. That is one possibility to deal with this question. I think that is what we would say is the main Shibatya.
Is that reserving this question to the pure metaphysical?
Yes. Right. I mean, there is nothing over here in reality, I think, that conforms to anything that we're saying. Reality that's perceived, I'll say it like that. In the metaphysical realm, we have a question that we're trying to deal with about the possibility of Geirus. Now,
can I just have a question? Yeah. So the main presupposition is that a ger is someone who's really Jewish?
I don't know if they're not Jewish in the technical sense, right? But whatever mila Jews have over non-Jews, right? That mila is because we are descendants of Avraham Avinu, etc. That mila also exists for Geirim. Because they are also spiritual descendants of Avram. And they fell off, right? But they had ingrained in them at that time, they had these aspects of Yahados.
Their ancestors
did. And it passes down, I'm assuming that there's a certain genetic transmission of the Abrahamic seed.
So would that mean, let's say Bob converts to Jews, good conversion, and Bob has two full siblings. Should I try to convert them? Should I proselytize to them? Because evidently Bob is a descendant of...
So, possibly. Or we could say that this Abrahamic seed kind of is in the metaphysical realm and doesn't necessarily go... That's what you say, genetics, and she like made a quotation mark, right? I think that's what you were referring to. I don't know. But I think one approach, which my guess is more mainstream than the next approach that we'll talk about, is that a ger is as Jewish as any Jew. And whatever Milo's Jews have, like when I say, Asher Bachar Bonu Mikol Ha'amim, right? That God chose us. Can the Ger make that bracha? Right? Can Ger say, you know, God chose us, one could say that the ger chose God, not that God chose the ger. No?
How odd of God to choose the Jews. It's not so odd the Jews chose
God. Yeah. Okay, I mean, we know the poems. But the fact is,
once the ger joins the
Jewish club, the simple understanding is that they are, again, there might be one or two technical differences that a ger, let's say, a gioris can't marry a kohen.
Right?
One or two technical differences that are thrown in, but on the fundamental level, there is no real difference. That's what I would say is a mainstream approach. It comes along the Sefer HaKuzari. And the Kuzari, along with the Chabad and with the Maharal of Prague, the Kuzari takes the approach that Klal Yisrael is fundamentally different than everything else in the world. Right? That's a fundamental idea within the Kuzari. And the Kuzari has an... This is paragraph Kuf Tezvav in Maimer number 1. So the Kuzari says, basically, that unfortunately, because of the long galus that we're in, so we are not keeping the Torah as properly as we should. That's an unfortunate thing, the Kuzari notes. And then the Kuzari notes that someone who chooses to adopt Judaism will end up, Misha Davak, you see I have like a few underlined lines, one line on top of where I underlined. I don't know why I do this. Every time I underline stuff, I end up starting like right before where I underline. This is just, I don't know. So Misha Davak B'derech Hazeh, someone who chooses this path, will have a large portion of the connection to God. V'im kol zeh, lo yishtaveh ha-ger ha-nichnas b'toratenu im ha-ezrach. Zak the Kuzari, a ger is never going to be the same as a citizen. Ki ha-ezrachim levadam heim ru'uyim le-nevuah, v'zul asam. Tachlis inyanam shikabu mehem v'shiyu chachamim v'chasidim, ach lo nevi'im. Zak the Kuzari, that a ger can become a chacham, a chasid, a wise person, a pious person, but nevuah, prophecy, which means the ability to perceive the divine in a much more pure sort of way, prophecy is not possible for a ger, according to the Kuzari.
So who told him that?
Huh? And his descendants.
And its descendants.
It wasn't Yirmiyahu descendant from the prostitute in Yeshua?
From Rachav.
Yeah,
from Rachav the Zona. Yirmiyahu descended from Rachav the Zona? Rachav married Yehoshua. That would be from Shevet Ephraim. Yirmiyahu was a Kohen. Again, it depends. If it's a direct line, I think it would be a problem. We'd have to...
But nobody else gets prophecy nowadays.
So today no one gets prophecy. But what the Kuzari is getting at is that in his worldview, a convert can never become a 100% full member of the team. There is always going... That's what he says. Again, like we might kind of not like these ideas, but from a certain perspective, if I'm coming from a Bechiras Klal Yisrael perspective, not from a perspective that I want Jews to be special and different, so then the question as to how Geirus is possible is a very real question. That's a very real question. Okay. So what we're basically arguing is that there are two approaches. One approach is that it's possible because every Geir is really a recreation of what you were beforehand. But approach number two, what? It's in the spiritual realm. There is some dimension that you have that comes down from those people as a nefesh ha'asu b'charan. Right? They ask the question, the Sefer Megala Amikus. The Megala Amikus was Reb Nosson Shapiro. No, he was the Rebbe of the Shach. The Shach, right? Megala Amikus is like a huge mekubal. The Shach writes talks about Kabbalah in one place. He says, don't learn Kabbalah. Hey, it's amazing. The Shachik never quotes Zohars. But the Megala Mikus is the Rebbe of the Shach, Reb Nosson Shapiro. He also wrote Svarim in Nigla, he also wrote some normal Torah. Megala Mukos asks the question, you know, we have a tradition that there's 600,000 letters of the Torah corresponding to 600,000 Jewish people, no? That left. So the question is, what about the Gerim? Where's the Ger's letter in the Torah? What? In the Haftarah. So, they say, the Megala Mukos quotes, that the answer is that we have, if you look in the Sefer Torah, you have the letter itself, and then you have the crowns on top of the letters.
Ah, nice.
The tagim, no? Certain letters, the letters Shatnez Gates, Shin Ayin Tes, Nun Zayin, Gimel and Sadi, get a crown on top of the letter. And those crowns is the place that the ger has in Torah. And they say that that's the pshat in the pasuk, HaGer asher bekirbucha yala alacha mala mala. The ger that you have is up above, is up on top of the letters of the Torah. Now,
what?
It's part of a curse, but we'll talk about that as we go on. Is the idea of gerim, is having converts to Judaism a good thing or a bad thing, is precisely what we're going to be discussing tonight. But that pasuk, yes, it's a pasuk in the Tochacha, but right, one could argue that the place that gerim have, now again, this gets at the same point. Right, if there's 600,000 letters in Torah, the Gemara in Kedushin says, and supposed to correspond to 600,000 nefashos, how can we ever have more? Right, where does that come? It's really the same question that we're grappling with in terms of what is a ger's place in Judaism. Is a ger a full member of the team, or is there some sort of difference? Now, even if, okay, we can't ignore Chumash, even if we assume that a ger, like the Kruzari says, is a tad different than the full Jew, can't attain Nevuah. But the Torah commands us, 36 places, 48 places, right, to love the ger. We have mitzvahs in the Torah that we have to treat the ger. Once the person is part of us, we have special mitzvahs to bend over backwards to show them additional love. I used to have someone, a friend I grew up with, who was a yassim, unfortunately. And whenever we used to like make fun of him, like the boy was an orphan. It was very sad. It was very sad. But whenever like we used to make fun of him, he would say, "You know what? You're gonna get cursed. You're gonna burn in hell for this one because I'm an orphan, right?" To a certain extent, right? The converts really have that. The converts can say, "Don't oppress me." The Torah says, "Va'ahavtem es hager, v'ger lo toneh v'lo tochatzenu." Right? Don't oppress the ger. 48 times in Chumash. That's a lot. Right? So, these differences, we're not talking about in the practical realm. Right? In the practical realm, adrabba, gerim require even more love. We have to show them that is fine. Now, we mentioned that there is very little in Shulchan Aruch about gerus. But today, gerus is a very big deal. In part, it's a big deal because of the world that we live in, because Judaism is attractive, because people want to connect to Judaism. And this is because we're so attractive. This also, though, the flip side of that coin, is it's because we as Jews in America in 2014, almost 2015, we are very assimilated. And when the Jewish people were on their own, isolated, they didn't come in contact with the world as much. People weren't attracted to them because of assimilation today. So it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, people want to become like us. On the other hand, we want to become like them. Right? My guess is just, without crunching the numbers, I think it's pretty obvious that we as a Jewish people lose far more than we gain.
You mean
Numerically speaking, there are more Jews who move out. Right? Now, I'm not talking about moving out in the old medieval sense of converting. You know, Jacob Katz, in all of his works, writes about how in the ghetto world, if you want out, you have to adopt a different religion. You have to become a Christian. That's not true anymore. Today, we just become American. Right? We completely... No, I mean, become American without any Jewishness to us. That's what happens. Now, this, in part, has led to a huge increase in gayrus because intermarriage is one of the last real issues that bothers lots of people. And if my kid is dating a non-Jew, I don't want my kid to get married to a non-Jew, no? I don't want my kid to get married to a non-Jew. So what am I going to do? I'm going to say, Rabbi, convert her. Convert, right? That's standard. By the way, I have to admit my own personal connection to this is that my father lost his job over this issue, no? My father used to be the head of an organization called the Council of Jewish Federations, which was the umbrella group for all the federations in North America. In 1989, there was an issue called Who is a Jew? Who is a Jew was basically that they wanted the Knesset to pass a law to say that you are only entitled to citizenship in Israel under Chol Kashvut, under the law of return, if you are a born Jew or someone who is mitgayer keho kahalacha, if you went through halachic gerus. And the Federation movement in America at that time was very opposed to the changing of the law of return. That's what happened. My father was running the Federation movement. He goes over to Israel. Actually, he made it to the front page of the New York Times about this. It was like a very weird moment. My sister was studying in BJJ, in Beis Yaakov Yerushalayim that year. Rebbetzin David calls her into the apartment one morning and says, did you see this morning's New York Times? My sister's like, no, I'm in Israel. I'm in the New York Times. So Rebbetzin David pulls out the New York Times. She's like, oh, your father's on the cover of the New York Times. So that was like a little bit strange. It also led to my father having an interview, a Ma'ariv. And the Ma'ariv interview went something to the effect of, you know, the Federation movement is pushing to not change the law of return, to not have Giyur Kahalacha included. What would you do if your child would want to marry a convert from the Reform or Conservative movement? So my father said something to the effect of, I would not stand for that under any circumstance. So that's me. Right, so my father lost his job over that comment. That was again. That's the what?
He bounced back.
He bounced back. I mean, he ended up directing the Bezdin of America. That was his next job, but it's a different story. But the fact is, the fact is that this issue of conversion to Judaism as a crisis comes up around every 20 years. 20, 25 years, it comes up. So now we're in the 2014-2015 iteration of conversion battles, and it's going to be a battle because the issue of standards of conversion will be discussing the next couple of weeks. I hope it doesn't come to this, but this could end up being a dividing line in different communities. Because if community one says you're Jewish and community two says, no, we don't accept your Jewishness because you're not following the protocols that we feel are appropriate, that creates big problems, right? And potentially that is on the table. In 1989, 1990, because of Who is a Jew, Tradition magazine came out with a book called The Conversion Crisis. It has beautiful essays by Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, by Rabbi J. David Blythe, by Rabbi Zvulun Lieberman, by Mark Angel. Lots of essays, we'll be quoting some of them, right, about this issue. So gerus has become a much bigger deal precisely because of the way we live. Now, part of the issue with gerus has always been not as much who is a Jew, but who is a rabbi to admit new Jews. And the halacha clearly says that you need a bezdin to admit Jews. And what we'll be discussing in the next few minutes briefly is what type of bezdin is needed to admit Jews to Judaism. Zakti Gemara in Yevamis Mem Vavam Beis. Rabbah tells a story about Reb Chiya that took place in the house of Reb Chiya Bar Abba. Others say it took place by Reb Oshi, etc. Where did the story happen? The Gemara basically said that a guy comes. It's a ger shemovalo taval. The ger had circumcision but didn't yet go to the mikvah. So he said, wait till tomorrow and we will immerse you in the mikvah. Says the Gemara, Shema min atlas. We learn three things from here. Shema min ger tzarech shleisha. You need three dayanim to immerse a person in the mikvah. Shema min ha'enu ger sheyomo v'yitbol. That you have to have both circumcision and mikvah. V'shema min ha'en lapil in ger b'layla. They said, wait till tomorrow. That means we can't do it at night. Why don't we do it at night? Right? The Gemara in the next line says, because ger tzarech shleisha mishpat ksivbei. Geirus requires three because it says mishpat. It says lua mishpat echag yelachem b'lai ger. Right? It's called lua, and lua requires a bezin, a tribunal of three. And anything that requires a bezin of three, based David dinu la boker mishpat. Mishpat has to be during the day, right? Bezin doesn't meet at night. Bezin meets during the day, right? So therefore, you cannot do geirus at night, because you require a bezin of three. That is the basic halacha. What? Is that li'ikuva to do a geirus at night? Well, what does it invalidate the geirus if you do it at night? So what do you mean by do it at night? Do you mean that the meal was done at night, the circumcision was done at night? Do you mean the tevila was done at night, the immersion, the mikvah was done at night? Do you mean the kabbalah's own mitzvahs? So we paskin in halacha that even though I don't start a din Torah at night, this is like the greatest trick in Judaism, no? You start the din Torah during the daytime and then you continue throughout the night. In other words, the requirement of mishpat being during the day, that requirement is only on tchilas din, not on gemara din. So there is a discussion in the Shach. We'll have to talk about this as we move on the next couple of weeks. But it could be that if the Kabbalah's own mitzvahs was done during the day, if the Beis Din recognizes that the person is sincere and accepts the mitzvahs during the day, so therefore the Mila and Tevila can be at night possibly. Although we have to point out that the simple reading of the Gemara is that the Tevila cannot be, right? That the Tevila cannot be at night. The Gemara says, wait until tomorrow. Now, in the middle of the Gemara, there's a line that said, do we assume that nami be'inan mumchan, that you need a mumcha, an expert? Now, an expert is a technical term in halacha. You see, they call me rabbi. That would be like a good title for a book. I'm not really a rabbi. There was something out there called smicha. Smicha was ish mi pi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe puts his hands on Yehoshua, no? Moshe kibel Torah, it's a pimento song. Kibel Torah, misara li Yehoshua, right? It goes down generation to generation, right? And that is the real smicha. We do not have real smicha today. Well, they call me rabbi, but what I am is an imitation smicha. It's a fake smicha. Right? It's basically a way of saying that I'm allowed to answer questions. My rebbeim felt that I'm qualified to answer questions in halacha, but I'm not a samach. I'm not a mumcha. There is a huge question that begins in this Gemara, and Tosfos and all the Rishonim address, which is maybe geirus requires smicha. Remember, so far we had two basic reasons why doing geirus today is problematic. Reason one, the Gemara asked, there's no carbon. Reason two, well, maybe the whole concept of geirus can't exist because how can you accept to become part of the Jewish people when there's this ontological Jewishness that's different? Reason three is that we don't have smicha today. If I don't have smicha today, how can there be geirus? So Tosfos asks this question. We're just trying to move quickly. If you look in the Tosfos in Yevamos Mem Vav Amud Beis, the third source, oh gosh, I'm up to the source number three. Tosfos asks, how do we accept Gerim today? Don't you need mumchen? Don't you need experts? So Tosfos answers, Yesh Lomar, Dishlichusayhu Avdinon. Shlichusayhu. Shlichusayhu is a halachic principle that works as follows. That we, the lower, less proper Bezdin, we are acting as emissaries of the original Bezdin. that Beis Din recognized that there would be a time where God recognized. Right? You see from Tosfos HaShlichus Sayhu is a din d'oraisa. The Nesivos points out in Siman Aleph of Choshen Mishpat. You see from this Tosfos that the principle of acting on behalf of a real Beis Din is a real principle. That's one version. The other version in the Tosfos in Kedushin on Samach Beis, the bottom lines in the Tosfos, Tosfos says that Od Amar Rabbeinu Nesano, two lines on the bottom, the Begerik Sivla Doroseichem, the Mashal Bechol Inyan, Afagar She'enu Mumchen. Right? That same pasuk L'Doroseichem, you can accept Gerim in all generations. That same pasuk teaches me that even though we are not Mumchen, we don't have smicha, still we could do it. So version number one is saying that we can only accept Gerim today because we are acting as shlichu sayhu, as a shaliach of the original proper Beis Din. Version 2 says that fundamentally Geirus does not require smicha. Now, this issue, how I side on these two questions, is one of the bigger questions in Judaism in terms of Geirus. Just to give the examples I'm mentioning now come from my friend Rabbi Michal Zoberman, who's now the director of one of the two directors of Geirus of the Beis Din of America, has a little pamphlet on Geirus called Tuv Lev. I think he's still up in the Heights, Rabbi Zilberman. Some people might know him. So he points out a few possibilities where this could be relevant. You know, the Syrian community has a rule that they do not accept any converts, no? Right?
In marriage.
They won't accept them into their schools. They won't accept them into their burial grounds.
How do they get away with that?
How do they get away with that? Who's going to stop them?
Okay,
right? So the Syrian community promulgated this decree in 1935, 1946, 1972, 1984. They keep on repeating it. Now, general word to the wise. If you keep on repeating something, what does that mean?
It means it's being challenged.
Right. It means it's being challenged. It's not being fully accepted. But in this book, The Conversion Crisis, Rabbi Zvulun Lieberman, he just died a few years ago. He used to be one of the Rosh Yeshiva by us in YU, but he was the rabbi of, what was it, the large Syrian shul on Ocean Park. What was it called?
Bethel.
Bethel? Okay.
Edmund Safra, I think.
No, not Safra. Bethel, I'll tell you in a second. Rabbi Zvon, he's a congregation, Beth Torah. Beth Torah. He was at Beth Torah in Brooklyn. So he basically just prints the language of these proclamations that they came out. We, the undersigned rabbis, constituting the religious court, together the executive committee of the Magen David congregation and outstanding laymen of our community, do hereby decree, with authority of our holy Torah, that no male or female member of our community has the right to intermarry with non-Jews. This law covers conversions, which we consider to be fictitious and valueless. We further decree that no future rabbinic court of the community should have the right or authority to convert male or female non-Jews who seek to marry into our community. We have followed the example of the community in Argentina, which maintains a rabbinic ban on any marital arrangements enumerated above, an edict which has been received, which has received the wholehearted and unqualified endorsement of the chief rabbi of the chief rabbinate in Israel, etc. The community, what? So they, now, the question that comes up is, when the Syrian community says no one from the community can convert someone, what happens if three Syrian rabbis get together and they convert somebody? Is the person really Jewish, just they can't marry into the community? Is the person not Jewish? Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Har Tzvi, has a tshuva where he maintains that the person is not Jewish. Because if Geirus works based on the rule of Shlichu Sayhu, that we are acting as emissaries, as a shaliach of the previous bezin, so you could argue that in a case like this, we are saying you are not authorized to do it. You are not a shaliach. And therefore, the Geirus would not be valid. What? But what the community is saying, every community has the right to make a takanas hakahal. They make a takanas hakahal, which is saying that no one in our community can be a shaliach of the previous generations. It's over.
Are they empowered to decide who
Why not?
Why, yes.
I mean, I would say...
Moshe Feinstein, let's suppose, said that anybody who wears a kippah can do a conversion. And now Mount Sinai votes that that you can't. So does that mean that we're nullifying the Moshe
Feinstein? I mean, one could argue that the original Beis Din that is making the shaliachs in subsequent generations to do conversions is only doing it in situations when there is no takanas hakohol not to convert in subsequent generations. But in other words, we're starting from above. The original community has no authority, wouldn't designate someone as a shaliach when it goes against that community standards.
It's possible, wouldn't it be proven?
I mean, it's certainly, but the question is an open question. Okay, alternatively, there has been a question recently about revoking Geirus that maybe we'll discuss later on. Revoking Geirus is a very frightening thing. If you're a convert to Judaism, then you are scared to death that some bezin later on is going to come and say, I am not Jewish. That is really, really, really scary, correct? That's like one of the most frightening things. Now, some of those who maintain that revoking conversion is possible is based on this idea of Shlichus Seidel. Because if I could discover that a member of the court was not as religious as they should have been, right? So then I could say, you know what? You had no authority to convert. Maybe the Beis Din, one could argue, again, it's not absolute, but one could make a case that the original Beis Din that is appointing the shaliach in subsequent generations is not going to appoint like just any schnippershock, any schnippershock is a town, it's not a person, but anybody. You're not going to appoint just anybody to make conversions. You're only going to appoint people who are somewhat learned, somewhat scholarly, somewhat moral, right? Now, this is a real question. Now, this question, of course, can go in very unfortunate ways. I know of cases where Batei Din in Eretz Yisrael say that no conversion done by a modern Orthodox Beis Din is valid and people convert again l'chumra. This is a real phenomenon and I have a proof because what was his name? Dr. Dreiluch in that stupid Purim spiel that came out from Yeshiva Lev Aryeh 2 years ago. I'm so frim. You know what I'm talking about? It's like a whole YouTube video. So on that YouTube video, there's a line about Am Sofrim that all of my children converted to Chimre. Right? Now, it's a real phenomenon. It exists. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. Now, this issue also might be relevant for another question that I don't think we'll have time to get into, but the question of can a convert serve on the Beis Din for conversion, I'm not going to go into the question now. If you look in the RJJ Journal, Volume 59, there's a nice article about this. Rabbi Michal Zoman has an article about this, but it's probably relevant to this question as well. Let's just talk for two or three more minutes about some of the concepts of conversion, and next week we'll start getting into the halachic details. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in his essay about Geirus in this book, The Conversion Crisis, Rav Aaron points out that there is really two different aspects of conversion. First of all, conversion to Judaism is very different than conversion was in the ancient world. In the ancient world, I believe in deity X, and then I decide to become a member of a new religion. That means that I also worship their deity, most often. In the ancient, right, in the Torah, our God is a jealous God. That means that you cannot be a Jew and a member of another faith. It doesn't work like that. Right? By becoming a Jew, you are renouncing any prior allegiance to another faith. That is very different than conversion was in the ancient world. We're not adding something on. Right? Syncretism is off limits in halacha.
from one monotheistic faith to another, like from Islam to
so even from Islam, right? Islam is a monotheistic faith, but we would not say that you can be, right? It's a contradiction in terms to be a believer in Islam and a believer in, and a Jew. You can't be both. Even though Islam is not avodah zarah from the perspective of the non-Jews, but from our perspective, you can't be both, right? Either the prophet is Moshe or the prophet is Muhammad, but you ain't going to be both, right? Either the greatest work ever written is the Torah, the greatest work ever written because he was illiterate and he wrote it, so it's got to be greater. But is the Quran. But the fact is, right, it can be one or the other. It can't be both. Right? And the proof, by the way, traditional, until Vatican II, Catholics could not even walk into a synagogue to worship.
Or a Protestant church either.
Correct. Right? Correct. Right? People say Jews are not tolerant because we have prohibitions against walking into churches, etc. Right? Well, until the 1960s, this was standard, right, in the Catholic world. Our God is a jealous God. Now, that's point one. That, by the way, is the basis of Gershon Eskaya Kekotin Shinol Adoni. There is a principle in Halacha that when I convert, I am born like a new baby. Gershon Eskaya Kekotin Shinol Adoni. And therefore, what that means is that my family relationships don't exist. Right? My biological father is not my halachic father. Right? A ger should technically not inherit his biological parents. Rabbinically speaking, we say there is Yerusha because we're worried that by not giving them Yerusha, that might encourage them to revert to their previous faith. Shema Yasar Lasuro. But fundamentally speaking, Ger Shenis Gayer Kekaton Shenola Domi. Right? You are born again. You are renouncing everything that happened beforehand. And the moment of Geirus, Rav Aaron points out in this essay, is on a certain level, it's a very personal thing. Why does someone convert? Conversion can be very much like tshuva. I can convert because I recognize that the life I was living beforehand was terrible. It bothered me. It was wrong. It was immoral. I give up on it. Or it could be like the higher level of tshuva. Tshuva me ahava. That I recognize that there is a certain truth in Judaism and I feel this gravitational pull towards Torah, toward Hashem. Right? I'm not renouncing what I had beforehand because I felt it was bad, but my pull toward Hashem is so strong that just like the Baal Tshuva who goes through Tshuva Me'ahava becomes a new person, a different person, a remade person, Geirus in some ways is the ideal of becoming born again. And that's the expression that's used. You're born again. Right? What?
You don't hear it very often.
You don't hear it in our communities. Okay? Go to Texas. Now, from that perspective, Geirus is very personal. And you ask 10 Geirim, you'll get 10 different Geirus stories. What led you? What was your eureka moment? When did you decide that you, and you'll hear different stories from everybody, right? They'll say, I never felt comfortable in church, right? I always felt like I was trapped, right? You hear expressions like this, like I never fitting in, right? It's a very personal thing, and no two people have the same story. On the other hand, Geirus, like we saw before, is Mishpat Ksivbe. It's law. Law means absolute. Law means it applies to everyone equally. There are standards. There are laws. How do you convert somebody? Mishpat, law, is also a way of maintaining society. So what we have when it comes to Geirus is there are two poles. There's the personal, the subjective, and then there's the communal element. When the ger is converting to Judaism, right, it's subjective. It's, I'm being born again, I'm new, I'm different. At the same time, though, there are laws, there are regulations, and you're becoming a part of a community. From the perspective of mishpat, geirus is adjudication. It's social affiliation. It's communal, it's not personal. I think this can help us deal with one of the more difficult questions, which is, you know, there are statements in Chazal about koshim geirim le-Yisrael, that geirim are difficult for the Jewish people. The Gemara, in fact, says that the reason, everyone knows this, we discourage converts in Judaism. Mm-hmm. Now, what does discourage mean? Does discourage mean that someone comes to convert, you like start chasing after them and kick them out of the building? No, it doesn't mean that, right? We hope not. But when do you discourage? How much you discourage? You discourage with your right hand, as it were, you discourage with your left hand. But be it as it may, there is a statement in the Gemara of Koshim Gerim Yisrael. And we say this when the Gemara in Mem Zayin in Yevamah says, right? We tell them, why do you want to convert? Don't you know that the Jewish people are oppressed? The Jewish people suffer, right? Tziv shver tzizayin yid, right? You say it in Yiddish, that way they understand. But the fact is, like, right? We try to discourage Koshim Gerim Yisrael. On the other hand, we have tremendous respect for Gerim. Not only does the Torah say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to love Gerim, the Gemara in Pesachim Pei Zayin says that the reason why we're going to Golos is to get more Gerim. Golos, and Rav Hirsch is very into this idea, that Golos is not necessarily a bad thing. Right? Golos is an opportunity to spread the wealth. Kidei she'yitosfu aleihem Gerim. Am I presenting this accurately? Right? Now, that is a very different perspective. Do we want Gerim or do we don't want Gerim? Right? If I take Hideshi Tosam Aleim Gerim, seriously, that means I want them. Now, obviously, you could say, well, there are different types of Gerim, depends how sincere you are, and you could skin the cat, main difference. And Tosis, by the way, Tosin Kedushin, works very hard. What does it mean, Koshim Gerim Yisrael? Gerim are difficult. So there's a few explanations. One explanation is that the ger converts to Judaism, but obviously you don't know everything when you convert because you didn't grow up. So people might learn from them to do things wrong on Shabbos. Right? That's one explanation of Tosis. Another explanation of Tosis is that Koshim Gerim Yisrael is exactly the opposite. That the gerim take religion much more seriously than the born Jews. And they will, as it were, cast aspersions on the born Jews. My grandfather, Olav HaShalom, lived in Givat Mordechai. And in the little shul where he used to daven, there was an American GI who converted to Judaism. And he used to get up between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and he would give fire and brimstone mussar. He would hit him hard. My grandfather always used to comment, my grandfather's name Baruch Schwartz, my son doesn't say name, he used to always comment, that's Koshim Gerim Yisrael, because they give the Musar, and the guy meant it, the guy, most of us are a little bit shy to give Musar, right? The Ger can be a true believer. By the way, that Perush, that the Gerim are more careful about mitzvahs than the regular born Jews, is said in Taisus and Kedushin by Reb Avram, the Ger. Like five lines before the end of that Tosis, Reb Avram the Ger comments that it's because they are more serious. Now, what does this mean? So my understanding is that a lot of this can be explained based on the personal aspect of the Ger versus the communal aspect. From a personal aspect, this person, if properly motivated, right, this person is striving for, there's so much to respect. This is amazing. You actually, right, the Medrash Tanchuma says that the Jewish people at Har Sinai were forced, Kafa Lehen Har Kigigis, the Gerim They did it on their own. Isn't that amazing? They wanted it. That's worthy of such respect. On the other hand, right, while the individual's worthy of such respect is tremendous, but from the communal perspective, it can cause certain problems. From the mishpat element of Geirus, right, it's somewhat questionable. Because what's going to happen now? Right? How does it fit in to the society? We really have to raise these questions. So I think one way of, so to speak, skinning the cat in terms of trying to answer this contradiction between whether we want Gerim or we don't want Gerim is, from the perspective of the individual, it's wonderful. From the perspective of the community, so we really have to think about, again, right, it could be that Kashim Gerim Yisrael is a great thing because the Gerim are more religious. It could be it's not as great. These other aspects also, though, reflecting what we're going to be discussing in the next couple of weeks. A few professors in Israel a number of years ago came out with a book, Avi Sagi and Svi Zohar, came with a book called Giyur V'Zehut Yahadut, Giyur and Jewish Identification. They basically argue that there is a type of conversion to Judaism which is just part of being a part of the Jewish people and does not involve Shmiras HaMitzvot at all. The real question in Israel today is the Russian community. They want to be part of the Jewish people. They want to fight in the Israeli army. How are you going to tell these people that you're not Jewish? And that's a very, very strong argument. It's very hard to argue against it. But on the other hand, if we understand that Geirus involves two components, right? Identification with the Jewish people, the mishpat, the being accepted with the Jewish people is one. But there's also this personal subjective drive to connect to Hashem. So if you only have the identification of the Jewish people, you're missing out on the real Geirus. The different aspects in the formal Geirus procedure, the Mila and the Tevila and the Kabbalah's own mitzvahs, we'll also have to look at from these perspectives. Rav Soloveitchik famously in the work Kodol Dido Fake, pages 95 to 99, analyzes along these terms. These are coming attractions, what we'll be discussing in the next couple of weeks. Next week, Amir Hashem, I want to talk about Kabbalah's own mitzvahs. What happens if you know that someone is converting to Judaism but will not keep all the mitzvahs? Mashal mahadavar doma, the person might actually speak Lashon Hara sometimes. Oh my gosh, right? Or the person might not keep Shabbos, right? Not keep where do we draw the line? Everyone will do some Avera. I firmly believe that. Does that invalidate every Geirus in the world? Because we know that you're going to speak Lashon Hara. Well, I hope not, but we'll have to try to analyze that in greater detail next time we learn. I thank you for listening. Have a good night.